Getting ready for a rally. I'm Pam Husso, Fox News. Law enforcement agencies in the nation's capital aren't taking any chances. They're prepared for potential violence at a demonstration scheduled for later today in support of the people imprisoned after the Capitol riot.
What we're concerned about, I think, more than anything, is the possibility of counter demonstrators and making it to this demonstration and there being violence between those two groups.
Capitol Police Chief Tom Manger, about 100 members of the National Guard will be stationed at a nearby armory. The rally is being organized by a former Trump campaign staffer. It was a tragic mistake. That's how the head of U.S. Central Command describes a drone strike in Afghanistan last month that killed multiple civilians.
An American Reaper drone had been shadowing a white Toyota Corolla for 8 hours before launching a Hellfire missile. The military thought it destroyed a car filled with ISIS fighters and explosives. Instead, 10 innocent civilians, including 7 children, were killed.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson, Senate Republican Ben Sasse calls the incident a stain on our national conscience. Efforts by the White House to shore up protection against the coronavirus have suffered a setback. An FDA advisory committee has rejected plans for across-the-board Pfizer booster shots. The panel did endorse a third dose for senior citizens and the immunocompromised.
Just 2 FDA advisors voted in favor of a third shot for the general population. An overwhelming 16 voted against it 3 days before the booster program was to be launched.
Fox's Peter Ducey. On Friday, the U.S. logged more than 207,000 new COVID-19 cases and more than 2,600 deaths, according to Johns Hopkins. America's listening to Fox News. The search for Gabby Petito now extends to her fiancé as well. Last night, police officers entered the home of Brian Laundrie's parents in Northport, Florida, hoping to find him there. But his parents said he hasn't been seen since Tuesday. His fiancé, New York native Gabby Petito, disappeared last month during a road trip with Laundrie. And since then, her family has been pleading with his family to release any information it might have.
I would just like his parents to understand, you know, parent to parent, you know, this is a serious, you know, issue, and I wouldn't wish this on them. No matter what I'm going through right now, I still don't wish this on them.
Gabby's father, Joe Petito. Meanwhile, authorities in Utah say the Petito case is not connected with a double murder in Grand County. His final days will likely be spent behind bars. Real estate heir Robert Durst has been convicted of killing his best friend in California more than 20 years ago. The 78-year-old faces life in prison when he's sentenced next month. Durst has long been a suspect in his wife's disappearance in 1982, but he's never been charged. What started as a double murder in South Carolina has grown increasingly more complicated. Alex Murdaugh, a once high-profile attorney, lost his wife and one of his sons back in June. Since then, he's been charged with insurance fraud in connection with an alleged plot to arrange his own death. Investigators are also looking into the 2018 death of a housekeeper.
When she died inside that house in 2018, it was portrayed as a trip and fall. She was said to be coming down the stairs and tripped over the dogs. But with the increased scrutiny that the Murdaugh family is under, some irregularities have come to light. First, the coroner was never notified of the death. Second, no autopsy was performed.
Fox's Steve Harrigan. I'm Pam Husso, Fox News.
Areas of fog will burn off early this morning, and we are expecting partly cloudy skies today with high temperatures into the mid-80s. We'll have the mugginess today. Also, a cold front will bring the chance for a few isolated showers later on this afternoon and into the evening. Dry conditions tonight, lows back in the 60s in the suburbs, near 70 degrees downtown. As we head towards your Sunday, mostly sunny skies, lower humidity, high temperatures in the low to mid-80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett, the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf behind the console. Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. The wheels continue to come off. France is upset with the United States. They've recalled their ambassador. There are more than 10,000 immigrants who are now in a small camp down under a bridge in southern Texas. They're waiting to get into the United States. And We have that report out of the Pentagon that the drone strike that the president had talked so much about that took out an apparent ISIS member. Well, it didn't take out an ISIS member. It took out civilians. So we'll be covering all of these stories this morning from a number of different angles. Today, the rally will take place down around the Capitol, the J6 rally, and we've got Ryan Barber who will give us the latest on that. He's with the Insider. He's been tracking it all week. He was at the press conference yesterday, so we'll chat with him in a few minutes, find out what that means for Washington and also what the preparations are for that rally expected downtown at the Capitol. But one of the stories this morning that even made it to CNN this morning, more than 10,000, and this is from Reuters, by the way. This is Reuters reporting. This is not Fox News or Newsmax. This is Reuters. More than 10,000, mostly Haitian migrants, were bivouacked in a squalid camp under a bridge in southern Texas on Friday, even as hundreds more headed toward the border in a growing humanitarian and political challenge for U.S. President Joe Biden. The Haitians were joined by Cubans, Venezuelans, and Nicaraguans under the Del Rio International Bridge. It's across the Rio Grande that connects Mexico to Del Rio, Texas. They slept under light blankets while a few pitched small tents. Well, that didn't go over too well with Senator Ted Cruz or with Senator John Kennedy.
It is the most horrific thing I've ever seen. It is packed in as a mass of humanity.
When it comes to illegal immigration, you just can't trust the Biden administration. It would be like trusting Harvey Weinstein with your daughter.
Moving right along, France has taken the extraordinary step of recalling its ambassadors to the U.S. and Australia. Both countries blindsided their French allies with a new military pact and submarine contract. The French Foreign Ministry making that announcement on Friday, and they are upset. This is unprecedented that France would recall an ambassador to the United States. What's going on here? Well, they had an agreement with the U.S. and the U.K. to acquire nuclear submarines for Australia. So Australia is going to get these submarines from the U.S. and the U.K. now. Well, what's the problem with that? Well, there was a previous $90 billion submarine deal with France. Australia ripped up that agreement. Well, that led these senior French officials to accuse the U.S. of a quote, and this is quoting French officials, a stab in the back. Remember how the Biden administration and the Biden team talked about making everything good with our allies and repairing all the damage that the Trump administration had done with our allies in Europe? Okay, and you heard the outcry from the allies, you know, that past couple of weeks over Afghanistan, so you've heard that. Now you see what's going on with the French. Moving right along, the U.S. military saying on Friday that it had mistakenly killed at least 10 Afghan citizens, including 7 children, not the Islamic State terrorist as they had intended. That was the drone strike on a car in Kabul last month. You remember September 2nd when President Biden was talking so much about that drone strike?
We have what's called over-the-horizon capabilities, which means we can strike terrorists and targets without American boots on the ground, or very few if needed. We've shown that capacity just in the last week. We struck ISIS-K remotely days after they murdered 13 of our service members and dozens of innocent Afghans.
Well, the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki also touted our success at the time.
What we've seen over the past week is that our over-the-horizon capacity can work and has worked in going after ISIS targets and killing people who went after our troops. So that's where our resources and our focus is going to be on at this point in time.
Well, neither Press Secretary Jen Psaki or President Biden stepped up to the plate late in the week to acknowledge the mistake, nor did General Milley, nor did the Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. They left it all for General Frank McKenzie of CENTCOM to explain. Now, this was yesterday at the Pentagon when McKenzie acknowledged the car was hit. It was a white Toyota Corolla. They are common in Kabul. Did not contain the militants that they believed they were targeting.
Having thoroughly reviewed the findings of the investigation and the supporting analysis by interagency partners, I am now convinced that as many as 10 civilians, including up to 7 children, were tragically killed in that strike. Moreover, we now assess that it is unlikely that the vehicle and those who died were associated with ISIS-K or were a direct threat to U.S. forces.
We'll talk further with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer about that this morning. You've heard the Biden administration last several weeks rolling out their big plans for everybody to get booster shots. Well, the FDA advisory panel met yesterday. They disagreed. This is President Biden jumping the gun earlier this month as he makes his decisions based on politics and not waiting for the science.
Just remember, as a simple rule, 8 months after your second shot, get a booster shot.
Okay, so that was the president touting the plan. Now, in a second, we're going to get to the White House COVID coordinator, Jeff Zients' comments. We'll get to that in a second. But the president was going to roll this out. Remember how they were all talking about the science and everything the Biden administration was doing on COVID was based on science. It wasn't on politics. It wasn't on anything but science. So they've lined this all up. Now, we've got a stockpile of booster vaccine that could cover virtually every adult American, and here's how they were very proud of it at the COVID Coordination Center.
We have supply in inventory, and we have also supply on order. So supply is in good shape.
Well, the supply is going to be in great shape because we don't need it for all adult Americans. According to the FDA advisory panel, they did say that adults over 65 and adults with immune deficiencies should take the booster, but not everybody else. So I guess you'll be able to find vaccine at overstock.com in the weeks ahead. That's just a few of the things going on that are problematic for the Biden administration. The poll numbers are reflecting it, and they're dropping even lower. Even CNN polls are reflecting attitudes of Americans. We'll talk about that a little bit later on with Jennifer Harper this morning. And while we're speaking of COVID, we've all seen the COVID death counts. Well, Cheryl Atkinson is back with us. She's been on hiatus for the summer out filming for the 7th season of Full Measure. She's back with us, and she's got some very interesting information on how some of those COVID deaths were counted, and those deaths were attributed to COVID, but not caused by COVID. We'll get together with KT McFarland coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, get her latest read on what's next for the Biden administration, and especially on the foreign policy front. As we mentioned, we'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer about the latest on the Afghanistan investigation. Jim Trusty will join us, of course. He is our legal expert, and lots going on the legal front when it comes to the John Durham investigation. Now, remember, the special prosecutor has been quite busy, although there have been no leaks coming that investigation. There was an indictment announced yesterday, so we'll get with Jim Trusty on that this morning. And you might have heard something. We're going to go off the path a little bit here. We're going to talk to Ronnie Mervis. You know, Ronnie, the jewelry expert, the diamond man here in the D.C. area. There's something new called lab-grown diamonds. Well, we're going to talk to Ronnie Mervis about that. I think you'll find that very interesting. And that's all coming up this morning right here on the Saturday Morning Update. So do stay with us. We're going to head over to the WMAL Traffic Center. Michelle Murray is there.
In Virginia, the earlier accident on 95 southbound after 123 in Woodbridge moved to the left shoulder, but you will still find some slowing traffic further south between Dumfries Road and Quantico, where the work zone reported through the area. And the earlier accident on 395 south after Glebe Road has been cleared from the roadway. In the district, be aware of numerous closures due to demonstrations and festivals. A portion of H Street will be closed in both directions between 3rd Street and Florida Avenue in Northeast due to the H Street Festival and due to upcoming demonstration activities. Several streets between Constitution Avenue, Independence Avenue, along 3rd Street Northwest will be blocked as well. as other numerous closures in the area. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Areas of fog will burn off early this morning, and we are expecting partly cloudy skies today with high temperatures into the mid-80s. We'll have the mugginess today. Also, a cold front will bring the chance for a few isolated showers later on this afternoon and into the evening. Dry conditions tonight, lows back in the 60s in the suburbs, near 70 degrees downtown. As we head towards your Sunday, mostly sunny skies, lower humidity, high temperatures in the low to mid-80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's currently 70 degrees in the nation's capital. It's 20 after 6 on the Saturday Morning Update. 6:21 Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. Well, we were talking a little bit about that drone strike in Afghanistan, but the entire exit and the entire policy has come under intense scrutiny. Hearings on Capitol Hill, both on the House and Senate side earlier in the week. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken took a drubbing, and this is how Ron Johnson summed it up. And, you know, they could play hours of tape for you, but this is one from Ron Johnson that I think kind of summarizes it, how a lot of people are feeling.
Mr. Secretary, if I were just to read your testimony, not having watched any news, I would literally think this was a smashing success. But I do read the news, as most Americans do, and we realize this is a complete debacle. And I think what concerns me the most, among many things, is that detachment from reality. It's the same denial of reality, for example, on the border. A self-inflicted wound, a crisis created by President Biden's policies that have completely thrown open our borders, and yet the administration denies that we have a problem at the border.
So there were hours of testimony, and this one was one that you may not have seen or heard because the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, completely blindsided here by a Republican congressman from Pennsylvania. He is Congressman Scott Perry. Now, listen carefully. I will let you formulate your opinions. But listen to this play out. This is fascinating and caught Secretary of State Blinken, I would say, off guard.
A little off topic here, but I think it's interesting. How long was your recent interview with the FBI, and was it a deposition?
I'm sorry, I don't know what you're referring to.
Are you saying that you have not had a recent interview with the FBI since becoming Secretary of State?
I'm not sure what you're referring to, and I'm happy to take that up with you offline.
Did the State Department turn over documents to the FBI related to Hunter Biden, Burisma, and or the Blue State Strategies Corporation?
You'll have to.
So you have no knowledge of this. You have had no. You don't. You are you saying you have not had an interview with the FBI since becoming Secretary of State?
It would not be appropriate for me to comment in a public forum on any legal proceedings that the department.
I'm not asking you to comment on the legal proceedings. I'm just asking if you've been interviewed by the FBI since becoming Secretary of State.
Again, I'm not going to comment one way or another on any legal proceedings or not that may or may not have happened.
Have you sought to,
let me remind the gentleman that the topic of this hearing is Afghanistan. That's what we're.
I appreciate it, Mr. Chairman, but the Secretary generally refuses to answer questions about Afghanistan, so I just figured we'd talk about something he should be intimately familiar with. Have you sought to alter any of your testimony from last year's Senate investigation regarding this topic, Mr. Secretary?
Gentleman's time has expired.
That clip has to go on the greatest hits boxed set of Senate and House testimony on Capitol Hill. Fascinating. Again, that was Republican Scott Perry of Pennsylvania and our Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken. 6:25, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Today, the Justice for J6 rally will be held at the Capitol. We're joined by the insider's Ryan Barber. And Ryan has been covering this very closely. He actually broke some news on it yesterday. You covered the press conference that was held by the Metropolitan Police and the U.S. Capitol Police. And what is the latest in terms of their preparations and what their expectations are for the day?
So as we heard from the chiefs of the D.C. Metropolitan Police and the Capitol Police yesterday, these officers are very much in preparation mode. They are bracing for a rally of hundreds of people. I think the number that they, the most recent updated number that they have is that this rally is going to feature, include about 700 people all converging on the Capitol, to rally in support of the, at this point, hundreds of accused rioters who are facing charges stemming from the breach of the Capitol on January 6th. So fencing went up around the Capitol on Wednesday. That is the essentially the fencing and kind of the image outside of the Capitol that we saw really from the days after January 6th through July. And what the various police leadership said on Friday at the press conference was that they are hearing a lot of concerning online chatter about what might be going on at this rally, about who might be coming. And they're also worried about some violence, possibly involving clashes between the Justice for J6 ralliers and counter-protesters, who they have reason to believe are going to be coming to town as well. So they are very much in preparation mode, and they have summoned resources locally and federally to be as prepared as possible.
Did they share any information about who they were expecting, the types of organizations?
So the group that has arranged this rally is called Look Ahead America, and it is led by a former Trump campaign staffer named Matt Brainerd. They obtained a permit to have what, you know, what the police call an First Amendment assembly, and so that is the group that is organizing and planning this. The concern about this event is that it's going to draw some far-right groups, including the Proud Boys, and another group called the Oath Keepers. These groups are believed to have been involved in the breach and attack on the Capitol on January 6th. There have been some charges in D.C., you know, specifically naming those groups and tying defendants to those groups. So that's a real source of concern for law enforcement as they prepare for this day and try to brace and be prepared for any violence that might come up. One thing that also came up yesterday at the press conference was that on the violence front, they're concerned about three groups that they described essentially as counter-demonstrators.
There were a lot of questions on January 6th about the National Guard. You actually broke some news about the National Guard and what's happening today.
Absolutely. So up until Friday morning, the request of the Capitol Police to have National Guard troops on standby was pending. On Friday morning, the Defense Secretary, Lloyd Austin, formally approved that request. So what's going to happen is 100 National Guard troops from D.C. are going to be stationed during the demonstration at the D.C. Armory, and they're essentially going to just be on standby to be able to be called in should the need arise. The Pentagon said on Friday that the National Guard would really only come into play after the Capitol Police first bring in any local, state, or federal law enforcement. So the presence of National Guard would truly be a last resort. The Pentagon said that their duties would be confined to securing the Capitol and some of the nearby congressional office buildings, essentially standing guard at entrances and keeping it and making sure that only credentialed staff and media are in locations where they're actually going to be allowed for portions of Saturday. And this demonstration is scheduled to begin at noon. It's expected to be focusing primarily on the Union Square area by the Capitol Reflecting Pool. But with some January 6th defendants being detained at the D.C. jail, there are concerns that some of the rallygoers might find their way to the jail all to express their support for these defendants that they are viewing as political prisoners. It was said as well at the press conference later on Friday that the National Guard troops, if ultimately called into action, they would not actually be armed. So it's really a last resort option for the Capitol Police, having those National Guard on standby.
Ryan Barber, Justice Correspondent at The Insider. Ryan, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
6:31, it's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
Still going traffic in Virginia on 95 southbound between Dumfries Road and Quantico Triangle with a work zone along the right side still in place, and that is what's causing those delays. Earlier accidents on 95 southbound after 123 in Woodbridge moved to the left shoulder, just a brief delay there. Keep in mind, in the district, several streets along 3rd Street between Constitution Avenue, Independence Avenue, and Northwest blocked for upcoming demonstration activity. And 8th Street will be closed in both directions between 3rd Street and Florida Avenue in Northeast. And all lanes and intersecting streets blocked for the 8th Street Festival. So keep that in mind. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Areas of fog will burn off early this morning, and we are expecting partly cloudy skies today with high temperatures into the mid-80s. We'll have the mugginess today. Also, a cold front will bring the chance for a few isolated showers later on this afternoon and into the evening. Dry conditions tonight, lows back in the 60s in the suburbs, near 70 degrees downtown. As we head towards your Sunday, mostly sunny skies, lower humidity, high temperatures in the low to mid-80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
70 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:32, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper joins us. She is with the Washington Times, right inside the Beltway. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Rick.
Do I remember how much the media used to make about polls and Donald Trump? How's it going for Joe Biden these days?
Well, things are a little rocky right now, and let's cite this morning, early in the morning, all these numbers from me, but here we go. This is from the tip poll, and everybody needs to know about what the tip poll is. They've been around for 3 decades, and they offer surveys in politics and the economy and so forth, but this is that one poll that has accurately predicted the winner of the last 5 U.S. presidential elections. They're the only folks that have done that. But anyway, they have something called the Presidential Leadership Index, and this is actually an analysis of a couple of different qualities about leadership and so forth in a president. Here's what they have to say. Can President Biden recover from the worst monthly drop in the Presidential Leadership Index in 2 decades? Again, this is coming from the tip poll, the very accurate folks. They released their analysis on Tuesday. They say that their index fell 9.3 percentage points. Again, this is their index. It's a combination of poll numbers here. And it all worked out to be a 15.8% decline in Mr. Biden's ratings. And this surpassed former President George W. Bush, who previously held the record at 15.6%. And that was set after the Hurricane Katrina hit United States back in 2005. So according to the tip poll, they say President Biden's performance dropped on every single issue we track. So not such a good week for Mr. Biden.
So President Biden had promised us, of course, unity and everything was going to be calmed down and we were all going to be happy moving forward. I'm not so sure about that. And even CNN has a question mark on that.
Why, yes, indeed they do. And they're talking about Americans themselves. And they had a poll this week that are kind of revealing that Americans are pretty fuming and pretty pessimistic right now. They found that 74% of U.S. adults now say that they are very or somewhat angry about the way things are going in the United States today. That includes 88% of Republicans, 70% of independents, and even 67% of Democrats. Again, this is a CNN poll, but wait, Rick, there's more. Another 69% of Americans now say that things are going pretty or very badly in the country these days. That includes 91% of Republicans, 72% of independents, and 49% of Democrats. That's half of them. Again, this is a CNN poll, and the biggest concern right now is illegal immigration. According to the CNN survey, they said that about three-quarters of Americans now say that it is important that the federal government, quote, stops the movement of undocumented immigrants into the United States. And a big partisan breakdown on that is 95% of Republicans, 76% of independents, and 52% of Democrats agreed with this. And according to the CNN analysis itself, the tentatively positive public outlook that marked the first months of the Biden administration has faded. And the survey, this is just released this week, finds a rising share of Americans who say things in the U.S. are going badly and that the economy is in poor shape with increased worries about coronavirus, the economy, and crime. Again, CNN had this this week for all of us to think about. And, you know, one other thing came out of CNN this week, which was an essay regarding all of these lousy reviews of President Biden right now. This was coming from two former advisors to Michael Bloomberg, Bill and Hillary Clinton. The gentlemen are Eric Wilson and Bradley Nonan, and they wrote a rather significant essay regarding all of this bad news, negative news about President Biden, certainly unexpected. But here's their takeaway in just a few words. They say, simply put, Biden's mandate was to ensure that Trump would never, ever occupy the White House again and ideally leave the political stage for good. They say, but somehow the Biden administration seems to have forgotten its mandate. Through a series of self-inflicted wounds, miscalculations, and gaffes, the Biden administration is priming the pump for a Trump presidency part two. So something to think about there. And again, this is news from CNN this week.
You know, you're talking about the border. How about the politics of it between the Republican ideas and the Democratic ideas?
Well, certainly the Republican ideas came across very, very clearly this week, because the Republican National Committee issued a very handy summary of what's going on down on the southern border, and it's a lot of numbers, but they're very, very telling. In August, again, this is coming from the Republican National Committee, 208,887 illegal immigrants were apprehended attempting to cross the U.S.-Mexico border. This is the highest number for August in 21 years, and the second month in a row, Rick, where the encounters have surpassed 200,000. That is a 317% increase over last August alone. It also noted that 18,847 unaccompanied children were apprehended during that time, and that 18% of migrant families and 20% of unaccompanied minors are now testing positive for COVID in recent weeks. And let's just switch to the Border Patrol. I love covering what they do. In addition, the U.S. Border Patrol agent seized 1,104 pounds of fentanyl and 19,671 pounds of methamphetamine in August alone. So Republicans are tracking this probably for all of us, because the GOP really has a pretty good reality check when it comes to these rather grave matters down there.
Jennifer Harper, inside the Beltway of the Washington Times. Of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Have a good weekend, everybody.
It is 6:40. It is the Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. And we head to the WMAL Traffic Center. Michelle Murray's there this morning.
On the outer loop of the Beltway at Old Georgetown Road, an accident is blocking the right shoulder and the right merge lane, so use extra caution there. Very slow traffic right now at 95 southbound between Dumfries Road and Quantico Triangle, with a work zone blocking the two right lanes, and that is causing extremely slow traffic through the area. In the district, be aware of some street closures due to the 8th Street Festival. So 8th Street is closed between 3rd Street and 14th Street, and all lanes and intersecting streets are blocked for this festival. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Areas of fog will burn off early this morning, and we are expecting partly cloudy skies today with high temperatures into the mid-80s. We'll have the mugginess today. Also, a cold front will bring the chance for a few isolated showers later on this afternoon and into the evening. Dry conditions tonight, lows back in the 60s in the suburbs, near 70 degrees downtown. As we head towards your Sunday, mostly sunny skies, lower humidity, high temperatures in the low to mid-80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
70 degrees, 641 on the Saturday Morning Update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. You've heard the slogan, nobody pays retail, why should you? And of course, you know, that is spoken by Ronnie Mervis, CEO of Mervis Diamond Importers. He is with us this morning. Ronnie, great to have you in studio with us.
My pleasure to be with you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
And I called you the CEO, but I would imagine you have a number of titles.
Well,
I mean,
you can call me CEO. That's probably how I go on Mondays and Tuesdays. On other days, I could be the Prince of Love or the Duke of Diamonds or the King of Bling or the Diamond Guy. So you can take your pick, any name you want. But officially, I am the CEO of Mervis Diamond Importers.
Your first shop was not in the United States.
No, and I'm not the founder of Mervis Diamond Importers either. That was started by my father when he was a young boy in South Africa in the early 1930s. And he built the diamond business, and he built it to a beautiful stage. And then my brother, one of my brothers, and I came to the United States, and we came to Washington, and we established the business over here. So in the D.C. area, we've been here since about late 70s, early 1980s, somewhere around there. And we've built our brand and we've established our presence. And I'm glad to say that we are the premier name in the Washington, D.C. area. And I'm always flattered to say that our name has become synonymous with diamonds. And that makes me feel very good about it.
Well, something I saw recently that really struck me, and I said, we need to ask Ronnie Mervis about this. You know, we see 3D printing now. We see lab-grown meats now. But we now have lab-grown diamonds?
That is correct. That is a new thing, lab-grown diamonds. The industry has taken a turn. And for a long while, we couldn't decide if we wanted to be part of the old guard or we wanted to be part of the new guard or we wanted to be part of both. And the answer is we still believe in natural mined diamonds, which is the cornerstone of our industry and our business. But at the same time, we are embracing the new science and the new technology, which is all about diamonds grown or manufactured in a laboratory under lab conditions. And they are known by various names, man-made diamonds, manufactured diamonds, or lab-grown diamonds. And we choose to use the names lab-grown diamonds. So that's the way we go.
So in nature, how long does it take a diamond to form?
Well, I'd like to explain to you how diamonds are created in nature. When the Earth was formed and there were volcanic eruptions, during the volcanic eruptions, tiny bubbles of carbon gas were trapped in the volcanic eruption, and under great pressure, great temperature, long times, these bubbles of gas were crystallized into what was the basic structure of a diamond. That could take hundreds of millions of years, could take up to a billion years for a diamond to be formed. Now, in a lab, using various technologies, we can create or emulate the same conditions and create a man-made diamond or a lab diamond in about 3 weeks. A bigger diamond might take a month or 2 months, but the typical 1 carat to 1.5 carat diamond, which is sold in most engagement rings, can be produced in about 3 weeks. So it's 3 weeks against a couple of hundred million years. Big difference.
So if it's been a billion years in nature and you do it in 3 weeks in a laboratory, what do you use and how do you do it?
Well, firstly, I said that when diamonds are formed in nature, they're formed under high pressure and high temperature over a long period of time. We can't emulate a long period of time, but we can emulate pressure and temperature. So the first way of producing diamonds has been what they call the HPHT method, high pressure, high temperature method. That's one way of doing it. But a new way of doing it, which is even better, is what is known as the CVD method, standing for chemical vapor deposition. And in that system, a tiny little diamond, a natural diamond, is placed in a vacuum chamber. Into that is inserted hydrogen and methane gas, and then through a process, the gases are extracted and certain things happen, which is going to take a long time for me to explain, so I'm not going to do it now. But in the end, the diamond grows. And by allowing the diamond to grow through the CVD, chemical vapor deposition process, we can create a diamond, and that's what happens. And then after that, it's got to be cut and polished in the same way that a natural diamond is cut and polished, and it gives you a beautiful diamond.
What do you see as the advantages and disadvantages?
Well, the advantages, firstly, is that it actually costs less to produce a lab-grown diamond than it costs to go deep underground up to 2 miles deep to excavate 20 tons of rock or so for every 1 carat of diamond. So there is a price advantage. Taking that same price advantage and turning it in its head, we can offer our clients a bigger diamond for the same money. So instead of getting a 2-carat diamond, say, in a natural, you can go to almost a 2.5 or a 3-carat in a lab-grown, so you get a bigger diamond for the same money. In fact, the lab-grown diamonds and the natural mined diamonds have got the same properties. They exhibit the same chemical, optical, and physical properties, so the clients can't really see the difference. You're really just getting a bigger diamond, a beautiful diamond, for the same money that you pay for a natural one, but you're getting a bigger one. The disadvantage of the lab-grown diamonds is that we don't know which way the lab-grown market will go in the future, and we can't necessarily guarantee the trade-in value or the exchange value if you want to go bigger in the future. With our natural mined diamonds, which is the cornerstone of our business, which we've been doing for about 80 years, and we will continue to do it for the next many hundred years, we know what prices are, and we can predict with a certain amount of certainty where prices will go in the future. So if anybody ever wants to bring a diamond back and trade it for a bigger one, we can guarantee the purchase price and say all you do is pay the difference. With a lab-grown diamond, we have no idea what's going to happen because as production increases, as the supply increases, prices could go anyway. And so we can't make the same offer to our clients saying you can bring it back at any time for a trade-up for exactly the same value. But most of our clients don't seem to care. As long as I can get a bigger, beautiful diamond for the same money that would pay for a much smaller one, that's the chance I take because most people say, well, if I can get a bigger diamond right now, I don't need to upgrade it in 10 or 20 years. I'm doing it one shot and done. And so it doesn't seem to be an issue. But that is the only real downside to it. The other thing, of course, is that a natural diamond represents a man's love for a woman. And he says to her, I'm giving you this because I love you. And I want to give you something natural and pure, which represents our relationship and my feeling for you. It's a little harder to say that with a man-made diamond because it's not a natural diamond. It didn't occur in nature. But people get over it because a bigger diamond for the same money is more important to many people than the argument about sentiment. So we go both ways.
So which way do you see the company going?
Well, we've always been a natural mined diamond company, and we will stay that way. We're not going to change that or get away from it. But we are going to embrace the future, and we are going to also include in our arsenal lab-grown diamonds because public wants them, and we're going to offer them. So we're going to have both, show both, recommend both, and discuss it with clients and advise them depending on their particular circumstances. So the answer is both.
Fascinating information. Ronnie Mervis, of course, at Mervis Diamond Importers. You can find out more on the lab-grown diamonds on the website. It's pretty cool. You've got the cuts and everything there.
Everything is there. MervisDiamond.com.
And, of course, as we all know, 800-HER-LOVE. Ronnie Mervis, thank you for being with us this morning.
My pleasure, and thank you.
6:49, Saturday morning update on WMAL. Coming up next, we'll talk with Jim Trusty. We'll get the very latest on the indictment that has come down from John Durham, the special prosecutor looking into the Russia probe of Donald Trump. That's next. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trusty joins his partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. He is the former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
The special counsel appointed by President Trump's Justice Department, John Durham, is probing the Russia investigation. He has charged a prominent Democratic lawyer with making a false statement to the FBI. What happened here, Jim?
Well, Mr. Sussman, during the 2016 campaign season, was apparently a party to this warped version of opposition research. It was actually a fabricated story trying to link Donald Trump to a Russian bank to suggest that he's a terrible stooge of the Russians. And Sussman knocked on the door at the FBI general counsel and told the story as if he was just a good citizen with concerns about the potential presidency of Donald Trump. Also knocked on the door of an unnamed federal agency as well. So he shopped this story to a couple of law enforcement locations.
So the attorney, Michael Sussman, goes to the FBI and tells them the story. It's not like the FBI had contacted him.
Exactly. There's this very strange and troubling, frankly, circuitous route that these things take. You know, the Hillary Rodham Clinton campaign had retained this lawyer. The lawyer is dealing with a variety of sources to try to justify the accusation, kind of like result first, evidence later. But he was looking to justify the accusation that Trump was somehow a Russian stooge. And once he had a story he was comfortable with, even if it turns out to not be true, he shopped it to these law enforcement sources, also went to the media. And, of course, what they're hoping for is to then circle back to the media and say, well, look, this is definitely a real story because the FBI is investigating it. So that's exactly how it played out. And it's a very eerie parallel to the Russian dossier story, which had a lot of the same actors involved in it.
Okay, so you walk into the FBI and you're telling a story like this. How does that lead to an indictment?
Well, it's interesting because it's a 27-page indictment for a false statement. That's got to be a new record. To have that much paper to cover a false statement. And the bulk of the indictment is laying out this scheme that emanated from the Clinton camp and made its way to law enforcement. But what's really intriguing or interesting to me is when you get to the actual crux of the false statement, it's not the government saying that they have to disprove all of the Russian collusion narrative. It's that when he went in, when Sussman went in and shopped these stories to law enforcement, He specifically said it wasn't for any particular client, that he was just doing this out of the goodness of his heart as a U.S. citizen. Well, it turns out by the time the Durham probe has looked at it, not only did Sussman contradict that when he testified in front of Congress about the client he had, Hillary Clinton, or her campaign, I should say, but he also had billing records that Durham's folks collected that show specific billing of the campaign during these moments when he's going to law enforcement to shop this story.
So the indictment alleges that he was billing his client while he was telling the story at the FBI.
Oh, sure. Yeah, he was billing his client and then turning around and saying, I don't have a client affected by this. I just want to tell you about this horrible development.
So his lawyers are saying, oh, this is all politically motivated. What does it take to get an indictment? I understand that the grand jury indicted him. It wasn't just John Durham putting this down on a piece of paper.
Right. Well, there's a lot of cynicism, you know, from the defense side of the aisle, I suppose, when it comes to how difficult it is to indict. The legal standard is probable cause. It's not a trial. There's not full-blown testimonial hearings. But again, the grand jury historically is a check on runaway prosecutors, and sometimes cases do get no-billed, which means voted down, or sometimes they don't charge everyone who the prosecutor wants to charge. So, yeah, it's an objective body. They're dependent on the prosecutor to provide them with the information and the evidence. But here, it's a knee-jerk and obvious reaction, right? If you're Sussman's camp, you're going to say this is just a political witch hunt, et cetera, et cetera. And impugn John Durham's motives. But as I've been saying with you for Saturday after Saturday, Durham's a professional guy. He's a prosecutor for life. He's not a political grandstander. He hasn't been leaking at all during this whole investigation, which is a good sign. It's nothing like the Mueller probe. And so I think this is a, you know, for Michael Sussman and for the people around him and the Democratic operatives that might be touched by this, it's a worrisome development because that 27-page indictment sure looks like more than a false statement being looked at by John Durham.
There was a statement from his law firm that he has resigned from the firm to focus on his defense. So sounds like he's taking this pretty seriously.
Well, he should. And I think it'll be a trial from everything I can see so far, as opposed to a guilty plea. The reason I say it might well be a trial is that he was indicted right at the very end of the statute of limitations. In fact, I think the statute would run tomorrow. And that tells me, in a case where clearly his attorneys have been talking to the government, they've been talking to the Department of Justice, you know, he's not cooperating with them. He's not willing to plead guilty. They're not willing to budge. So I think we're going to see a very interesting trial in this case. And one issue that's going to factor into a false statement case is what's called materiality. And in this case, the materiality is whether or not the FBI relied on these lies. And that's a broader question of whether the FBI was happy to accept lies and just use it as an excuse or whether they were actually a victim of dishonesty. So that may play out in open court someday, too. It'd be very interesting to watch.
We saw how seriously the charge of lying to the FBI is taken in the case of General Michael Flynn. In the event of a trial and conviction, what might that mean?
If he's convicted, there's some real potential for damage for him. I mean, not just having a felony conviction, but possibly going away to prison, because general deterrence kicks in. You know, when a judge hears how devious this scheme was and how this lawyer was willing, by the way, a former DOJ lawyer, that he was willing to come in and lie to the highest reaches of the FBI and other agencies, you know, there's a lot of room for potential punishment. And you go back to the Mueller probe, those false statement cases were kind of the coins of the realm. But they were serious resource drains on people like General Flynn, who had to fend off these types of charges for a long, long period of time with many pretrial motions.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Follow him on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer. Jim, thank you as always.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You too. 6:57, we've got John Gizzi, Cheryl Atkison, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland coming up in the 7 o'clock hour.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.